It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Lee Kuan Yew, founder of modern Singapore, dies at the age of 91. He was Singapore's architect of its rise to global economic prominence. Lee Kuan Yew was hospitalized in Singapore General Hospital in early February with severe pneumonia and was later placed on life support. Mr. Lee became Singapore's first prime minister when the island gained full self-governance from Britain's colonial rule. And he led the island nation from 1959 until 1990. Mr. Lee remained the country's driving force long after his retirement, three decades later. Shiite Houthi rebels seized the central Yemen city of Taiz. The Houthi militias, who were opposed to Yemen's president, took control of the city's military airport without a struggle from local authorities late Saturday. They patrolled parts of Taiz Sunday with Houthi gunmen firing shots into the air to break up protesters demonstrating against them. Hours after the takeover, the rebel leader Abdul Malik al-Houthi vowed to send his fighters to the south, where Yemen's president Abdel Rabb Mansour al-Hadi has taken refuge. Tunisia's president Baji Kaid Essebsi says that a third gunman in the massacre of tourists at the country's National Museum is on the loose. The Tunisian president's statement was the first time officials have said there were three gunmen in last week's attack that left 21 people dead. Police killed the two other gunmen during the museum attack. Despite fierce fighting around Libya's capital of Tripoli, United Nations-led peace talks in Morocco will be extended for another 2 days. The talks almost collapsed after forces allied to the internationally recognized parliament in Tobruk attacked Tripoli. This is VOA News. Insurgents captured 4 Syrian airmen Sunday after their helicopter crashed in a rebel-held area in northwestern Syria. Another crew member was killed by his captors, while the fate of a 6th airman was unknown. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the aircraft experienced a technical malfunction and made an emergency crash landing near Jabal al-Zawiya. Syria's state news agency confirmed one of its helicopters crashed in Idlib province. The head of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, says Iran knows it will face tremendous consequences if it tries to develop nuclear weapons. Mr. Brennan spoke in an exclusive interview on Fox News Sunday.
I think they realize that there's going to be tremendous costs and consequences and implications if they were to decide to go for a breakout. There are a number of things that the United States has available to it to prevent Iran from getting a bomb.
Mr. Brennan said he is confident that U.S. intelligence capabilities are sufficiently robust and that the United States understands what Iran's nuclear program entails. He spoke a day after U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry held meetings in Europe during a temporary pause in nuclear talks with Iran. NATO's military commander is again calling on the West to consider sending defensive weapons to Ukraine to help it offset Russia's continued support for the pro-Russian rebellion in Ukraine's east. U.S. Air Force General Philip Breedlove told a Brussels conference Sunday that NATO intelligence shows what he called disturbing new evidence of military hardware and other supplies flowing across a completely porous Russia-Ukraine border in violation of a ceasefire deal Moscow helped broker in February. In Afghanistan, authorities say the initial probe into the brutal killing and burning of a woman by a mob for allegedly desecrating the Muslim holy book suggests the victim was wrongly accused. Ayaz Ghul has more.
Afghan officials and relatives have identified the victim as 27-year-old Farhanda. She was buried in a Kabul graveyard Sunday at a funeral attended by hundreds of people who chanted, "We want justice." Women's rights activists carried Farhanda's coffin to her grave, an unusual move conservative Afghanistan has not witnessed before. The victim was beaten to death by a mob of men in the Afghan capital this past Thursday. Farhanda's body was then set on fire before it was thrown into the Kabul River. Mobile phone footage circulating on social media shows that police did nothing to prevent the fatal attack. Ayaz Gulf, Islamabad.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz expected to announce today he is running for U.S. president. The 44-year-old first-term senator will be the first high-profile candidate to formally launch a bid for the Republican Party presidential nomination. Cruz, who joined the Senate in 2013, is a favorite of the conservative Tea Party movement. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's main opposition gives an ultimatum for President Koroma to rescind his decision to sack Vice President Sam Sumana.
Anyone trying to foment trouble, hiding under the cloak of either a political party or any organization for that matter, definitely will make sure the rule of law prevails.
Abdoulaye Bérété is Sierra Leone's government spokesman. Nigeria's Electoral Commission meets tomorrow with stakeholders ahead of Saturday's presidential election. The U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe says sanctions will remain until democracy prevails in that country. And a South Sudan former rebel group frees 250 child soldiers.
The government commission responsible for this and UNICEF are currently in the process of demobilizing the children. So far, 1,300 children have been demobilized and registered.
John Budd is UNICEF communication officer for South Sudan, and natural hair is gaining popularity among Ivory Coast women. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone's main opposition, the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, has called for an indefinite campaign of civil disobedience if the country's sacked vice president, Samuel Sam Sumana, is not reinstated. Mr. Sam Sumana was sacked by President Ernest Bai Koroma after he ceased to be a member of the ruling All People's Congress APC party following his expulsion from the party on March 6 for allegedly fomenting trouble in his home district of Kono. Suleiman Sanja Banja Tijansi is the National Secretary General of the opposition SLPP. He said unless Vice President Sam Sumana's dismissal is rescinded, the civil disobedience will include boycotting the president and vice president whenever they speak in parliament.
We had a meeting of our second highest administrative body, which is our National Executive Council, on Saturday, 21st March 2015. And in that meeting, a six-point resolution was adopted. And that included, among other things, instructing our legal team to institute proceedings in the Supreme Court, challenging the dismissal of the sitting vice president of the country, who was constitutionally elected by the people of this country, and also a de facto vice president who lacks the mandate and who is also unqualified to be appointed as vice president, because according to our constitution, you must be qualified to be a member of parliament to be elected as vice president. So we are also proposing walkouts by our members of parliament from state functions where the present president and the de facto vice president is in attendance or is presiding over.
So if you are planning a parliamentary boycott, how does that help the people of Sierra Leone?
We would boycott like when the president is addressing parliament on the state opening. We would participate in the vote, not sitting while he addresses us. Because as far as we are concerned, he has committed a fundamental breach of his oath and the constitution of Sierra Leone, which he is supposed to uphold and which he is supposed to guard and defend.
The government claims it followed the constitution when they removed the vice president.
He did not. The government assumed that he did. By claiming power, it does not have under our constitution. The government is claiming under a section of the constitution that declares the title of the president as head of state, fountain of justice, fountain of honor, and supreme executive authority of the state of Sierra Leone. That does not grant him any power to go against a fundamental provision of the constitution, section 55, which states clearly the circumstances in which the position of vice president of the country becomes vacant. He ignored that and relied on inapplicable provisions. We consider the action itself arbitrary, and we think that this is a reminder of the bleak days of our country when we were in the era of dictatorship and arbitrary rule.
A spokesman for the government says the government has no problem if you people are protesting, but it believes in the rule of law as long as you do not violate the rule.
We will not violate the rule of law. The planned protests are going to be peaceful and silent. Our placards will speak for themselves. We are not confrontational. Our party is grounded on the principles of the rule of law and order. We've given the government a 7 days deadline to either accede to our demand or we would come out with the actions that have been adopted by our National Executive Council.
And those demands include the former vice president being returned or what?
Yes. It means that they should withdraw the press release that dismissed the vice president from his office and from his duties.
Suluma Banja-Tijansi is the National Secretary General of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Sierra Leone's government spokesman, Abdoulaye Birete, said President Ernest Bai Koroma's government stands for the rule of law and every Sierra Leonean has the right to exercise his or her freedom of speech as enshrined in the Constitution. But Birete said the government will make sure the rule of law prevails if anyone or political party tries to make trouble. He was reacting to an ultimatum from the Sierra Leone People's Party for the president to rescind his decision to dismiss Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana or face civil disobedience and boycott. Birete said President Koroma's decision to sack Vice President Sam Sumana is in line with the Constitution.
Our reaction is very simplistic, that this is a country of the rule of law, a country whereby our own democracy is defined by virtue of the provision in the 1991 Constitution and the actions of the president, in as much as we are not averse to any people venting their views, whether in support or against the actions of the president, once it is done within the ambit of the law. But anyone trying to foment trouble, hiding under the cloak of either a political party or any organization for that matter, definitely will make sure the rule of law prevails. And we encourage everybody to go to the Constitution and utilize Section 124, which gives the Supreme Court of this land the right to interpret any constitutional matter.
You know, Abdullah, we keep hearing more information about this problem between the president and, as you would say, the former vice president. There are some people who are saying that the president is trying to get or got rid of the vice president because he was going to blow the whistle on some kind of corruption involving Ebola money.
Well, basically, the president has been calling for people to account for whatever monies they are expending in the fight against Ebola. And that was how it culminated into the audit service Sierra Leone coming out with a real-time transactional audit report, which is now being deliberated in the House of Parliament, particularly the Public Accounts Committee that has invited all those institutions and persons named in the report to give accounts of how they have used such money. And our policy as a government, and particularly President Koroma, is zero tolerance to corruption. So which means for all the reason why we even capacitated the audit service Sierra Leone to do this transactional real-time auditing is for us to continue in the midst of the fight against Ebola for people to be transparent and accountable in terms of using public money in this fight.
Sierra Leone government spokesman Abdoulaye Birete was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, will tomorrow, Tuesday, hold its final briefing with stakeholders before Saturday's presidential election. Nick Dazan is INEC's Deputy Director for Public Affairs. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty, who is in Nigeria to cover the election, that the commission is also appealing to all Nigerians to come out on election day and exercise their democratic right.
We'll update all the stakeholders about the processes we have put in place, about our state of preparedness for the 2015 general elections, and then appeal to them to play their own roles during the elections. For the electorate, we expect all the voters who have permanent voter cards to come out in large numbers to exercise their franchise and to do so peacefully. We expect the politicians to ensure that at each of the polling units and voting centers that they also have agents to represent them. We also expect the observers, domestic and international, to go around the polling units, observe the elections, and file their reports. We expect the media also to go around the states and the polling units, observe the elections, and eventually file in their reports. And we expect the security agencies to secure the environment for the elections.
So let me ask you, people have expressed concern about cloning of PVC cards or permanent voter cards. What measures has the Electoral Commission implemented in order to thwart this phenomenon so that voter irregularities or rigging of the elections will not materialize in this particular election?
For the elections, we are going to deploy the card reader, the smart card reader, which we would use to accredit voters before they vote. And one of the roles that the card reader plays is to ensure that only genuine cards issued by the Independent National Electoral Commission are permitted. So if you come with a card that is cloned or is bogus, the card reader will certainly reject it, and it will not be verified to vote. And we have always tried to impress on Nigerians that, look, cloning these cards is a waste of time. Also, buying cards off voters is a waste of time because no one person can vote more than once.
So far, the distribution of the voters' card, I understand it's been, in some places, over 80%. What are the actual figures?
Well, for now, we have distributed nationwide up to 82.77%. And there are states in which we have reached the 95% mark.
Nick Dazan is the Deputy Director for Public Affairs for Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty in the capital, Abuja. Today is Monday, March 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton has been defending his country's decision to maintain targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe despite calls by that country's main opposition leader to end the sanctions. In an interview with VOA last week while on a visit to Washington, Morgan Tsvangirai said President Robert Mugabe and his government were using the sanction as an excuse for the country's economic stagnation. But Ambassador Wharton says the sanctions will remain in place because there's still concerns about the lack of democracy and the rule of law in Zimbabwe.
You know, I certainly respect the rights of Zimbabweans to speak out and to make their opinions known. You know, our position is that the reason for imposition of the travel restrictions and the business restrictions 12 years ago are very clear. We are concerned about the state of democracy. We are concerned about observation of the rule of law. We were just concerned about the economic consequences of some of the policies here. So we are ready to sit down and talk about those things at any time. But I think that until those basic conditions are met on which Zimbabwe's economy can grow, sanctions are likely to remain in place.
Are these sanctions having any intended effect? If yes, how?
You know, the fact that the elections in 2013 were peaceful, I think, was a reflection of broad international concern about what had happened in 2002 and 2008. I think that international pressure, whether those, the U.S. visa restrictions and business restrictions or static concerns or AU concerns or European concerns, I think they have had a positive effect in Zimbabwe.
That was Bruce Wharton, the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, speaking with Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says a South Sudan rebel group allied with the government of President Salva Kiir has freed 250 child soldiers. John Bard is UNICEF's communication officer for South Sudan. He said the children were released by the Cobra faction of David Yao Yao's rebels as part of a deal with the government after Yao Yao joined the Juba government last year. Bard said the rebel group could release another 400 children soldiers in coming days.
This weekend, UNICEF and the National Mobilization and Disarmament Reintegration Commission of South Sudan started the demobilization of 654 children from the Cobra faction, which has reached a peace agreement with the government of South Sudan, and its entire militia is being reintegrated with the government forces.
So this is the rebel group that you're saying released the children, is that correct?
Well, it's the Cobra faction of David Yao Yao, and as I said, he has reached last year a peace agreement with the government. So he is now aligned with the government of South Sudan, the SPLA. And as part of the process by which his troops, his soldiers, are demobilized, there are approximately 3,000 children in his forces, he says, that need to be demobilized. And the government commission responsible for this and UNICEF are currently in the process of demobilizing the children. So far, 1,300 children have been demobilized and registered for UNICEF to look after them after they leave the armed force.
I think it was earlier this month that your group said that the rebels had taken children. So was it David Yao Yao you were referring to, or were you referring to Riek Machar rebel?
Well, we have spoken at length over the last few weeks about a number of issues that we're confronted with in terms of both sides, that's the opposition and forces aligned with the government, taking children. In the first instance, on February the 15th and 16th, in Wa-Shaluk, the Johnson Ohlone militia took several hundred children, boys, and they seized them for their militia. Now, what we're seeing in Unity State is that the opposition forces are themselves now beginning to take increasing numbers of children there, again, into the several hundred. And this is ongoing. It's happening right now. So there has, in two of the conflict states, that's Upper Nile and Unity, we have children being taken. However, in Jonglei State, which is to many parts of it are relatively peaceful, we're having this demobilization of child soldiers because of a peace agreement being signed.
Let me say, because I just spoke with the rebel spokesman, Colonel James Lonye, and he's categorically denied that the Riek Machar rebels, they do take children hostage. He said they don't do that. They don't recruit children.
We have very credible sources that say that the children, many children, are being taken and being taken right now.
And this also includes the South Sudan government forces?
The Wa-Shaluk militia are aligned with the government forces, and the Wa-Shaluk militia are taking children.
John Bard is UNICEF's communication officer for South Sudan. He was speaking with me from Juba. In Ivory Coast, the natural hair movement is sweeping the country and prompting women to ditch chemical hair straightening products. But local attitudes and mainstream media still strongly influence what is considered attractive. Christine Roby reports from Abidjan on a group of women who are trying to change perceptions on natural hair.
Over the past 5 years in Ivory Coast, women have increasingly exchanged hair extensions and relaxers for kinks, curls, and twists. Reason Up Hair Salon, which specializes in natural styles, opened in December in Abidjan. Stylist and co-owner Azi Ayuru says natural hair is more than a fad.
This trend is sticking. Once women try natural hairstyles, then they find it hard to return to relaxers.
Oyuru says Ivory Coast women were inspired by a global trend toward natural hair, which embraces ethnicity and diversity in beauty. But she notes the lingering prejudices of colonialism can still influence opinion here.
For some people, they say natural hair is dirty or doesn't have the same value as white hair. I think that feeling goes back a long, long time.
And natural styles are meeting resistance at the workplace. Women like Mamoru Kayata says straight hair is still mandatory at the office.
For most companies, bosses don't like it when the hair is natural. They frown on it. For example, they will tell you your hair is too frizzy. We must fix it a bit.
Kayata says some parents begin straightening their children's hair at an early age, so it's all some young women know. Adioma Mensa has come to the salon twice a month for a chemical relaxer since she was 16. She says she tried natural hair, but prefers her hair straight.
I tried, but natural hair is not pretty on me. I prefer the way relaxers make my hair soft.
3 years ago, Mariam Diaby created a group called Nappies Dababi to encourage women to embrace their kinky hairdos.
The main objective is to say to women, you do not need to straighten your hair to be pretty afterwards, to have healthy hair, or to have nice hairstyles. We are here if you need advice.
Diaby blames mainstream media for the slow acceptance of natural hair.
90% of ads show a fair-skinned girl with smooth, long hair. That's what we project into the society. The prototype of a beautiful woman is one that is pale, one that has smooth and long hair. As a result, all the world wants it to be like that.
Karamoko Medina says she thought it was too expensive to go from perm to natural hair, but finds what she needs at the local market to keep her hair healthy.
I use a lot of shea butter to make my hair softer. In addition, I use avocados, bananas, eggs, honey.
Members of NAPI's Dababi, while natural hair enthusiasts, say what is important is to share information so women can decide what hairstyles make them happy and define their own personal beauty. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Abidjan.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. A 17th-minute goal by midfielder Bernard Bulbwa powered Nigeria to a 1-0 triumph over hosts Senegal at the Africa Under-20 Championships in Dakar on Sunday. Earlier on, Ghana beat Mali 3-1 in the bronze medal playoff. And Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana and Mali get to represent Africa at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand later this year. Turning to basketball, Nigeria beat Mozambique 72-59 to win the men's Four Nations Basketball Challenge in Johannesburg, South Africa on Sunday. Earlier on, South Africa outplayed Kenya 87-64 to claim the bronze medal. Staying in Johannesburg, Nigerian captain and former professional with Seattle Supersonics, Orlando Magic and Atlanta Hawks in the American NBA, Olumide Oyedeji, was crowned the most valuable player in the final. Oyedeji urges the Nigerian government to support Nigeria's Olympic dream team.
Oh, well, I mean, it was all about team effort. It was a great game. It was a great feeling, and it was really, really, really great. So I want to say thank you to my team and everybody.
You met the Mozambicans in the finals of the All-Africa Games. Your comparison of that team and today?
Well, I mean, probably I'm a Mozambique. They're a very tough team. As I said, I'm going to give kudos. I mean, to give her the tough game, to give her that was a good match. They play hard. I mean, my teammate, we came back. We fought. I mean, we stayed together. We get together. And we pulled the game up. So it was a great game. And
what do you feel should be done to uplift basketball in Africa?
Oh, well, brother, it's all about awareness, more sponsorship, corporate sponsor, more awareness. I think basketball is really growing in Africa. We have a lot of African descendant and origin that plays in the NBA. So it was a great thing. So hopefully we can continue. We can base on this. We can build on this. And then we can move forward and make basketball one of the greatest sports in Africa.
Going forward, you are the defending champions of All-Africa Games and also preparing for the Afro Basketball. What do you think Nigeria's chances are, given that they are the team to beat at All-Africa Games and you want to go to the Olympics?
Well, I definitely want to pick the solo Olympic ticket. I mean, I don't want to go to Olympic qualifier. I want to pick the ticket by winning Afro Basket. I don't want to win all African games as well. So, I mean, hopefully we can get our team together, we can get our players together, we stay together, practice, we have fun, because the funds have been the most difficult thing in Africa, particularly in Nigeria. So hopefully we can get funds from our poor ministry, from the government, we can put team together and we can start early preparation and make things go well.
That was Olumide Oyedeji, Nigerian men's basketball team captain, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owen, Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, March 23rd.
This is William Pokulo, and I speak to you from Monrovia, Liberia. It is unfortunate that Liberia can again recall the case of Ebola after we were nearly heading to be Ebola-free country. I call on all Liberians to follow the international protocol as to avoid reoccurrence of Ebola around the nation. Thank you, and have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment. And that's it for this Monday, March 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butter saying, I hope you have a very productive week.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies. 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Nigeria decides 2015. The final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.